broadcasting worldwide.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody, to this week's show. Excited to be with you here at Refresh Your Wealth with Mark Kohler, yours truly, and Matt Sorensen. Here every week, trying to help you save taxes, protect your wealth, better live the American dream. I want to say thanks to all you new listeners for tuning in. And for those of you that are regular listeners, thanks for coming back. We want to say thanks. We're getting some great feedback on social media and all of our followers out there, clients on our newsletter and talking about the show. Just want to say thanks and for spreading the word. And please continue to send us a little note here and there of topics you'd like us to cover. We're always looking for great topics. We're here for you, trying to refresh your wealth. So thanks so much. And I'm here with my amazing partner, the one and only Matt Sorensen.
You know, there's a couple Matt Sorensens, actually, but I'm the only good one.
There's probably a few out there, huh?
Well, today is a cool topic. It's one that's really applicable to real estate investors, and one that is a big topic, but one that we really want to cover, and that is, which is the entity to use for your real estate investments? So a lot of people hear these entities out there. Which one should I use for my real estate investing? And it depends on what you're doing. It depends on how many properties you got. We're going to go over that and explain so you know which entity you should be using when you're investing in real estate.
Yeah, this is a hot topic, and probably in every one of our consultations almost daily around the country. And there's a lot of misinformation out there, a lot of scams, a lot of people overdoing it. Of course, I've written on this over and over again, and in all three of my books, it's a constant theme of choosing the right entity. And folks, let me just forewarn you, doing a little Google search for a half hour and then going to one of those websites with the last name of Zoom and then just hitting click, click, click and trying to get your entity set up, that may not be the best method. So we hope to help guide you through this process and recommend that you get a consult with someone that knows what they're doing at an affordable price. But we're going to hit the highlights so that you know if even a consultation makes sense for you.
Yeah, and on that topic, I mean, I know you guys can change your own oil maybe. You know, you get online and figure that out. But just because you can doesn't mean you should. And, you know, setting up your legal entity is the same thing. So a little bit of advice and someone that knows what they're doing really does go a long way. So well, I'm excited for this. It's going to be a big topic. Keep in mind, we do have some other shows that just dive in specifically to LLCs or S corporations. So there are some other resources on prior podcasts, but we're going to focus this specifically to real estate and the entities to be using in real estate investing. But before we get into the topic, we do like to give some tax and legal tips, and I get the pleasure today of hitting the tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right, now today's tax tip is about winning the lottery. What taxes are owed if you win the lottery?
Oh, I like it, Matt. This is good. I like it. I've got my Powerball ticket, so this could, you know, this could be
all right, it's up to $1.5 billion, you know, and this tip is going to be really important information for one person.
Yeah, we really try to help our audience from a broad spectrum, but not this time. This is all about one person. I like it.
Yeah, it's just one person. That's all this matters for. Everyone else, it's just, you know, interesting. Okay, now here's how it breaks down. I want to just, you know, let you know this. Now remember, there's two parts to this. You have your federal taxes, and you have your state taxes that depends on where you live. All right, now the first part on the federal tax. This is taxed at your ordinary income tax rates. Now, folks, if you win the $1.5 billion Powerball, you're going to be in the top tax bracket, okay?
Yeah, but you're going to be sitting at the table with Donald Trump at the IRS. There's no way around it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, okay? And that tax bracket is 39.6%. Now, there's a rule of withholding that applies to these lottery winnings. That means they're going to actually withhold the lottery 25% automatically. So you're going to have 14.6% left that you're going to have to send into the IRS. And believe me, everyone's going to know who you are. So you're going to want to make sure that that money gets sent. So that's the federal side, 39.6%. And 25% is going to come off the top before you even see it and go straight to the IRS. Now, the state part of this is depends on the state you live in, of course. And you have maximum tax rates in the states. You know, I mean, some states, if you're lucky enough to be in a no-income tax state like Nevada or Florida, I mean, great. You're not going to have to pay any state income tax on the lottery winnings. But if you're in a state like California or New York, I mean, you're going to be 10-plus, at a rate of 10-plus, paying state income tax on those lottery winnings. So you have the state and your federal income tax. There's nothing too complicated about this, except I thought it was kind of fun to talk about. And it's a combination of your state and federal taxes. Now, I just want to let you know, if you bought the $1.5 billion Powerball ticket, you only get about $930 million if you do the direct payout. If you do the payouts over time, you get $1.5 billion. And I think you get that over like 20 plus years or something. I don't know that anybody ever does that. So $930 million straight up front. You may be in a 40 to 50% tax bracket depending on what state you're in. So you may get between 40 to, you know, well, so let's see. You'll get about 60 to 45% of the money depending on the state you're in.
Well, let me say this. First of all, a little American dream tip here, folks. Take the payout over time. Statistics show that within 22 months, lottery winners are broke. Isn't that crazy? Within 22 months, for those that take the direct payout, they've lost all their money. So, word to the wise, take the payout over time. No problem there. The next 20 years will be nice. You'll learn how to manage the money over that time period. And Matt, I got a tricky question though here for you. So in Nevada, you can't buy a Powerball ticket. So if I'm a Nevada resident, I have to drive down to this little town called Prim that's right on the border of south of Vegas, about an hour, 45 minutes, and stand in line. I've driven by this parking lot. There's like 3,000 people in line right now as we speak in line to buy a Powerball ticket right over the state line in California. But what happens if I'm a Nevada resident, but I buy my ticket in California? Do I pay California state tax because I bought the ticket there, but I'm a resident of Nevada? I don't know. Do you know the answer to that?
Wow, good question. I know the state of California knows the answer.
I mean, I can guess what they're going to say.
Hands are out there. Yeah. Well, you bought that ticket here. Technically, that income was made here in California.
Yeah. No, you know, this is a good little transitionary point. I'm just going to bring this now. We're having fun here, but this is an important point for those that are talking with us about real estate today. When you live in a state but have a rental property in another state, that's where this LLC concept comes up again. Which entity do I set up? And keep in mind, folks, you've got to pay tax in that state where your rental property is, even if you are a Nevada resident. So if I live in Nevada, I have a rental in California, I'm still filing a California tax return. So it's kind of fun that we're talking about this Powerball, but this does relate to the issue of owning real estate in multiple states, which we're going to circle back to today. So, woo, there you go, bringing it full circle, huh?
Yeah, nice. Way to get a practical tip for all the rest of us, not just that one person that's going to win.
Yeah, and I'm sure the person that wins Powerball is a listener of our show. So you can send us a thank you later. Send us a check later, and we appreciate that. Okay, now let's go over here to our quick legal tip of the week.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, I get the honor of giving a legal tip today. And I want to give a little advice about when someone owes you money. What do I do? it's like playing poker. What do I do first? Do I play the, do I lay down my cards? Do I bluff? Do I draw? Do I, what do I do? And when you're trying to collect money from someone, it really is a poker game in a lot of ways. And you've got to take the right step. And it can cost you too much money if you go too quickly for the kill. There's some great steps to take that can be affordable to maybe shake a little money from the tree. So I want to just, first of all, bring up this topic, and we're going to go to break. And I want all of you to think about that. What about the person that owes you money right now? What should I be doing to get paid as quickly as possible? So hang with us. We're going to be right back with more of Refreshing Your Wealth. Welcome back, everybody, to Refresh Your Wealth with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Excited to be here with you today, holding our Powerball tickets in our hand. Now that Matt's got us thinking about it, so I want to give a little shout out to some of you. Blow a little favor in your way, a little blessing that maybe one of our listeners will win the Powerball and, of course, sponsor our show for the rest of their lives. Just throwing that out. Okay, now we've got to follow up on our legal tip that I just introduced before the break, and that is, what happens if someone owes me money? Now, we've talked about literally for an entire show this topic of collecting money from folks and how to avoid a lawsuit. We're diving into that topic on a regular basis, but I want to give a little tip here, and that is the effectiveness of the shot over the bow, and that is that nasty letter that can start the process quickly to get payment. And we see this happen. I don't know what the percentage is. If I had to guess, I'd probably say 40% of the time it gets the result you want. And so I want to encourage all of you not to rush to the courthouse. Don't go file the lawsuit. And at this, on the other extreme, don't just keep sending nasty emails. Sending emails and texts threatening people, that can also be inflame the situation. So I want to just recommend, get a lawyer that you trust that's not going to take advantage. They may charge somewhere between $300 to $500. They want to hear your story. They'll prepare a letter and let them send a nasty letter, certified mail, to make sure that it gets received by this other individual, and have the lawyer also email the debtor, if you will, directly. Make sure they get the message, but have a lawyer send a nasty letter and give them a deadline. Say you've got 10 days to make payment arrangements or pay in full, whatever you want. But that nasty letter can be affordable, it can be simple, and it lets the debtor know that you're serious, that you've talked to a lawyer, and you're not going to back away. So maybe quiet down the rhetoric and the screaming and the yelling and the drama, and at the same token, don't rush to go file a lawsuit and pay a huge retainer to some lawyer that gets you all hot and bothered. Send the nasty letter. See what happens. Hopefully you'll shake a little money from the tree. There's my tip. Boom, bada bang.
Yeah, I like that. That's always a good step. It's a reasonable first step. It shows you're serious. And it is pretty effective, you know, from our experience. I think a lot of people that owe others money owe many people lots of money. Mm-hmm. And sometimes being the aggressive one means you get paid first, or they prioritize you. So stay on that. Good tip, Mark. All right. Well, now I want to jump to the question of the week. And first, we're going to address the question from last week. Now, I posed the question on last week's show.
And this was a good one, Mario. I like this one.
This is a good one. This is a good one. This is Demi Moore, swimming pools, and an accidental death. All right. Okay.
Made for reality.
So if you – all right. So what happened? Demi Moore leaves, goes out of town. She has an assistant who's an actual employee of hers who stays at her house. This employee throws a party for herself and her friends. Party's going great. I'm sure there was some adult beverages being served. Unfortunately, at one point during the party, someone realizes a person fell into the pool and died. Now, that's a sad outcome, obviously. I mean, this is, you know, I don't want to make light of this someone died in this scenario. So, and this is what caused me to really think about this when I heard the story of, man, this happened. And my lawyer brain immediately started thinking, geez, well, who's liable? Is Demi Moore liable? And I started thinking, man, I have rental properties with swimming pools. I have clients with rental properties with swimming pools. How does this pool liability issue apply? So the question from last week was, is Demi liable from a legal standpoint? Now, we had Leanne from Casa Grande, Arizona, local here somewhat, I guess, to me, write in with the correct answer saying yes. And I'm going to elaborate on this and try and give some, perspective on this. So here's how it generally works. When someone is an employee of yours, you are responsible for their actions. And if she's the employee and has responsibility for the home where Demi lives, and Demi authorizes her to throw the party, which presumably she did, then she's going to have some liability for what happens on that property. And there's a lot of things, obviously, that the employee did wrong. Clearly, no one was supervising the pool. There apparently was alcohol being served, and I don't have the details from the actual case files, but presumably that's part of the case and something happened, or maybe this person couldn't even swim. I don't know. but as a general rule, I think in this scenario, Demi's going to have some liability because this was an actual employee of hers who has had responsibility for taking care of the home and failed to do so.
Wow.
What do you think, Mark?
I think that's tough, and it's hard. And I want those that own rental properties that have a swimming pool to realize there are some distinctions here, because
yes, very true.
I think
I can address that too.
Yeah. So throw that out. So if there wasn't an employee, could have been a different result.
Yeah. Let's take the scenario of a rental property. You own a rental property with a swimming pool. Tenant is staying there and there's an accident of tenant or their guests. Now, if you're a landlord, you want to do a few things to make sure you're not responsible for that accident or death. The first thing, you want a clause in your lease agreements. Now, I have a clause in my lease agreement here. It's pretty standard in Arizona about swimming pools that says you agree to take care of the pool, to make sure the pool is supervised. I even add in anyone who's staying in the property has to be able to swim. So you want to identify those things, and by doing that, you're pushing that responsibility onto the tenant. Now it's the tenant's responsibility to care for that. And so that's what we're doing in those scenarios. In the landlord-tenant scenario, Mark, we're having the tenant take on that responsibility to care for and supervise the pool. That way it's not the landlord's responsibility.
I like it. Great question, Matt. Leanne, good job. Poor Demi. Or Demi Moore? Well, we're sorry for that tragedy for all the way around. Just a bad lose-lose
for
situation.
Everybody.
It was terrible. Okay, now question of the week. Now for those that are new listeners here, we pose this question every week and we want your responses. Leanne was first to email in with an answer, so she wins a copy of either Matt or mine's book. We'll be in touch with her to deliver that book to her autographed. Well, here's the question for this week. So I'm walking through the airport. I'm on a business trip and I'm, headed through, getting to my flight, and I got about 10 minutes to kill, and I'm walking through the little gift shop and I stop to purchase a few items. And I look over to the side and I think, ooh, they've got rock stars here. I'm always good for a rock star. So I buy a rock star. I buy a pack of gum on the plane because I don't want to sit next to someone with bad breath. And, I want to make sure I'm very respectful of that. Some of you that have sat next to someone like that know what I'm talking about. And I pick up a little bag of caramel popcorn because I'm a little munchy. Want to get some caramel popcorn. And I pick up the new copy of Men's Journal magazine. Pick up the magazine. So I get a magazine, a rock star, some gum, and a little caramel popcorn. My friends, the question is, what is deductible from that purchase? There's your, just throw down a little email. So you could say all of it. You could say everything but. You could say only this. Just send us a little email. Take a guess. Take a stab. And you can email Matt or Mark at KKOS Lawyers. We'll be right back, folks.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Let's dive into the topic of the day, and that is which entities to use in your real estate investment. We're going to be talking about entity structuring and planning here in real estate. Now, as we get started off, Mark and I are going to do some back and forth here. I call it a volley.
Oh, I like it. Okay. A volleyball reference there. I like it.
Yeah. Or tennis. Volley, perhaps.
Yeah.
And so let me start this off here and talk about one of the first and biggest issues in real estate structuring for investments, and that is the rental property. I'm buying a rental property. Here's the common advice. Generally, for rental real estate investments, workers recommend an LLC, Limited Liability Company, LLC. Now, the LLC is going to own the real estate. The LLC is going to have a bank account that receives the income from the real estate and pays the expenses. The reason we like to use an LLC for rental real estate is asset protection. We're not doing it for tax planning or anything. I'm going to let Mark talk about some tax issues, but we're doing it for asset protection. So what happens if I have a property owned in my personal name, something goes wrong on the property, the plaintiff can sue me personally, get at my personal assets, get a judgment against me personally, garnish my paycheck, get into my personal bank account, put a lien on my house, all those nasty things. But if it's owned by my LLC, the recourse of the plaintiff is to simply sue the LLC. They can get what the LLC owns, but they can't come after me personally. There's what's called a corporate veil of protection that protects me as the owner of the business from the liabilities of the business. That's why people will use LLCs for many things, but especially in rental real estate. So rental real estate, think of an LLC first, and we're doing it for asset protection. We're not doing it for tax planning.
Matt, I love it. And that definitely gets us into, kind of introduces the topic. I know there's many of you that are experts out there who are like, okay, guys, tell me something I don't know. All right, we're going to take it to the next level. Your brain's going to explode at the end of this show. So be really, really careful. So, okay, so here's the next thing. What happens if I'm doing a short-term deal? I'm not doing rental property, but I'm doing a short-term project. So if you're doing short-term real estate, a fix and flip, something you're going to buy and fix and rehab and sell within 12 months, maybe even a wholesale deal, estate closing, something that's short-term in nature. Folks, an LLC is not the right entity to choose. You would want to make sure the money funnels through an S corporation. S is in small. The S corporation allows you to do the salary dividend split. We've had entire shows dedicated to that topic. If you're a real estate investor and this is a newsflash to you, please go back to that prior episode and listen. We've got tons of articles on this and YouTube videos as well. But the point is, short-term deals should go through an S-corp. Now, Matt, I'm going to pose you a question. So Matt and I are going to go into a short-term real estate deal. Is there still a place for an LLC if you and I partner on a short-term deal?
Absolutely. We just do an LLC that is the partnership and owns the property, but then Mark and I would each have our own S-corp that owns the LLC. So the LLC, it works as the partnership, but we still get to funnel the money, or launder as Kohler likes to call it, the money through our S-corporations. Now keep in mind, the S-corporation, the reason you bring in the S-corporation is to save on taxes. That's what we're trying to do. We're saving on taxes using the S-corp. But we only need to do that if it's short-term real estate. If it's rental real estate or long-term real estate, you don't need the S-corp. You're already exempt from certain taxes using the LLC. And the tax is self-employment tax. It's exempt for rental real estate already. But on short-term real estate, you have to pay it. We like to use the S-corp because you can minimize that specific tax using an S-corp.
Okay. Now I love it. That's where an LLC does fit in, because we first said don't do LLCs if it's short-term. But again, if you're going to partner on a short-term deal, my S-Corp partners with Matt's S-Corp in an LLC. Now, let's take it another turn here. Let's say I'm going to go set up a real estate project in another state. Matt lives in Arizona. I live in California. And we're going to do a deal in Wisconsin. Let's say it's long-term in nature. So I'm going to we're going to buy a rental out there. So, do I set up my LLC in Nevada? Hold it. I should, right? Because I've heard all those radio commercials where I should set up in Nevada because it kicks butt in Nevada, and I'm going to get better asset protection.
Yeah, and there's no income tax in Nevada.
Yeah, that's right. Let's do it, man. Get me to LegalZoom.com. Hurry, quick. Okay, folks, not a good move. And no matter what seminar you're going to, if you're getting some coaching to set up an entity in another state, you want to get a second opinion. Think twice, because I'm not going to get any protection in Wisconsin unless I set up the entity in Wisconsin or register the entity in Wisconsin. Now, we're going to get to some higher level planning here in a moment, but I just want to say, first of all, next point is where you're doing the deal is where you set up the entity or make sure your entity is registered.
Absolutely. So in that example, Mark and I are going to do a Wisconsin LLC. The Wisconsin LLC will own the property. That's the best and easiest way to do it. Now, let's take the next question of what happens if I have multiple rental properties? I have one LLC and I've got five properties. Should I be using a separate LLC for each property? Or should I be putting all properties in one LLC? Now, Mark, that really comes down to a question of equity, right? I mean, that's what we want to look at is it depends on how much equity you have between those properties. Not how many properties you have, but how much equity you have.
That's right. I like that. And it really is a quality versus quantity issue. And everybody's a little different. There's also risk tolerance. Some people want to have one entity for every rental. Okay, that's cool. You're a little more skittish. You're concerned. That's fine. But don't overdo it. We want to make sure that 3 years from now, you're not mad at us because we overdid it with you. So we're going to walk through that. And this is what a consult's all about. We only charge $800 for an entity in any state across the country. And you get a conversation as long as you need to make a good decision with an attorney on the right type of entity. So that's what we're going to talk about because everybody's situation is a little different.
Yeah. And when we look at that, we're going to look at how much equity you have in the property. A general rule of thumb is once there's $250,000 of equity, we want to set up separate LLCs. So for example, let's say I have 10 rentals in one LLC and they're all mortgaged to the hilt. I've got $5,000 of equity for each of those 10 rentals. So I got $50,000 of equity total. We're going to say just keep those in one LLC. We're not really concerned. On the other hand, if I've got three rentals, each rental has $200,000 of equity itself. We don't want all those three rentals in one LLC because what happens if something goes wrong on property number one, the plaintiff can sue the LLC and get it all the properties. All the equity in the properties is now at risk. So what I can do is I can break up those properties and I'll have one property per LLC because there's enough equity there. There's 200,000 equity on each property. I don't want all my eggs in one basket. So if something happens on one property, it affects all others. If I put them in separate LLCs, now what happens if something goes wrong on property number one? That only affects that LLC. The other two LLCs and properties are treated separate. Great asset protection strategy.
Okay, now let's take it to the next level again. Let's say we've got a client that has 10 or 15 rentals. They're really worried about outside lawsuits. Has nothing to do with the property, but maybe they're a chronic texter and driver. And they know they're driving down the road and they're a moving lawsuit waiting to happen. Or maybe they're in a high-risk occupation or who knows what. But you're worried about an outside lawsuit and you really want to protect your rentals. See, folks, here's an important distinction. An LLC protects you from the rental, but does it always protect the rental from you? That doesn't happen in every state. There's only a few states that have this outside charging order protection. So what we'll do in some instances is we'll set up a parent LLC that's got charging order protection and let the parent LLC own the baby LLCs in multiple states or in the same state. And you're getting that charging order protection at one level and then the separate baskets of protection like Matt was just talking about at another level. But we don't set that up for our brand new investor. We're going to graduate into that as your rental portfolio grows.
Yeah, and when Mark says charging order protection, what he means is if you have a judgment against you personally, that creditor cannot get into the LLC and force the sale of the assets or take any cash or property out. They get what's called a charging order, and they have to sit outside the LLC. So the LLC is essentially protecting the assets from your personal creditor. So that's that charging order protection Mark referred to. Now, I want to bring up another type of entity, which is called a series LLC. Now, there's a number of states that allow for a series LLC, Illinois, Utah, Nevada, Tennessee, Texas, Oklahoma, Delaware, bunch of states, I think there's maybe 15 or 16 now that allow this series LLC. What the series LLC does, allows you to have one LLC with the state, and then that one LLC adopts what are called series, and each series owns a separate property. The thing that's nice about that is I just have to set up one LLC with the state, but I have a separate series for each property. Now, we're going to come back after the break. I'll break down how the Series LLC works. We're also going to mention maybe limited partnerships and do you use them in real estate or not? C-Corps, do you use them or not? And tie off this topic. But thanks for being with us. We'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back, everybody, to Refresh Your Wealth, our final segment here. Excited to be with you here today talking about entity selection when it comes to real estate. So just to recap here a little bit, again, if it's a short-term deal, make sure you have an S corporation somewhere in the mix to save on self-employment tax. And if you've got a lot of revenue running through, it can save a variety of taxes. Very, very important. But when it comes to asset protection in the long run, it's setting up the right type of LLC in the right state, and should I have multi-layering of LLCs? The big point here is not to overdo it. Get some advice from someone that's experienced and wants a long-term relationship with you that isn't going to take advantage. Be careful of someone that's a non-lawyer, some guru that just says do this, do that, and then you don't have the company maintenance. I wanted to mention that for a minute too. I just quickly, make sure for those of you out there that have an LLC, keep in mind one sheet of paper is not an LLC. You've really got to have the operating agreement, the minutes, a corporate book, stock certificates. You want to keep that LLC in good standing. You want to make sure you're doing annual minutes. And you'll say, well, I don't have to do that with an LLC. Yeah, you just go, you know, get in a court situation with some interrogatories or a deposition. And it's a really fun experience to show up with your one sheet of paper and explain to everybody how I've got this LLC I filed online. It protects me. Yeah, you want to show up with your gun loaded, ready to go, with your defenses fully put together. And having a good LLC maintained is very affordable and simple. We charge like $150 a year for our company maintenance program. Give our office a call, talk to Becky, you can learn more about it. But setting up that LLC is just critical and maintaining it. Because all of this discussion doesn't matter if you're gonna set up the LLC and then put it in the drawer. You need to have a separate checkbook for the LLC, use it on the lease agreements, use it, make sure the property's tiled into it. So, so important. Now, Matt, you were gonna bring up the Series LLC as another nuance here, I think, is an option for those that are in certain states.
Yeah, so the Series LLC, as I was explaining, is one LLC with the state, but you can adopt separate sub-series. Now, this is cool because I can have Series 1 that owns one property. Series 2 owns a separate property. Series 3 owns another property. And those separate series get separate liability treatment. So if something goes wrong on property number 1, well, that only affects series number 1. I could have 100 series in one LLC with 100 different properties, and all those other 99 properties are now totally protected from the thing that happened on series 1. So again, this is just one LLC you file with the state, but you can adopt multiple series. The cost to set up a series LLC is a little bit more. It's a little more complicated. Mark said our entity fees are usually $800 an entity. A series LLC is $1,500. But we include up to 10 series with that. It's a really cool entity, available in about 16 states of where you can use it, and great tool for asset protection for people that have multiple properties in multiple states.
Love it. Now I'm going to bring in one major last twist that takes us to another level again. That's the limited partnership. And this is a huge topic with a spoiler alert that I've talked about in my books, and it really shocks even seasoned lawyers and CPAs that haven't really dove into the details of this limited partnership nuance. And that is, a limited partnership does give you great outside protection when you hold real estate. It's much like that charging order protection that's only available in about 13 states. In my new book, I have a table that goes through all the states that provide maximum asset protection from the outside. But more states provide limited partnership protection. So some of you listening are going, Mark, I went to a workshop the other weekend and they said I need a limited partnership and I'm going to get better asset protection. So I'm just going to go out and set up a limited partnership. That's true. You may get better limited partnership protection with a limited partnership, but you're not going to get the flow through losses and the tax write-offs from depreciation, mortgage interest, and all those wonderful tax benefits of a rental property. They're not going to flow through a limited partnership. They go into a limited loss carry forward. And even if you're a real estate professional, you don't get to deduct those write-offs. So be careful of the limited partnership. So where do we use the limited partnership? We love it for raw land, farms, second homes, cabins, beach houses, something that's not generating a deductible loss, that's not a rental property. So think through that decision of a limited partnership again. Get a second opinion if someone's pushing those on you. That can be a really bad result.
All right. So we've tied off those entities here. We talked about the LLC, the S Corp, the Series LLC, the limited partnership. Now, let me just mention the final entity and when we use it in real estate. That is the C Corporation. And the answer is never. Okay. So that's all you need to know. You don't need to know anything about the C-Corp because you don't want to have it, all right? It's a tax nightmare, double taxation, don't use it in real estate, end of story.
Also, I want to finish it with a quote on this topic because as Matt brought up at the first, we are setting up these entities to make sure we are protected from a potential lawsuit because we don't want our wages garnished. And to quote the infamous Irwin M. Fletcher, I do not want my wages garnished. So I just want to throw that out for those Fletch fans out there. You know what I'm talking about. So anyway, Matt, can I borrow your towel? Just saw a water buffalo get hit out there. But anyway, okay. Now, thanks everybody for listening in on this topic. Now, we got one 5-star review before the end of the show. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, let me read one of our 5-star reviews. As you guys know, we love 5-star reviews on iTunes. It really helps other people find this show and make us look good and makes us feel warm and fuzzy at the same time. So we had a 5-star review come in by Unray, and it was said, Mark and Matt, always looking out for your best interests, attorneys with integrity and compassion. Thanks for the 5-star review and for listening. And for those that do give a 5-star review, let us know. We want to send you a free copy of Minor Mark's book. Let us know which one you want. You can email us. It's sometimes hard to make out your handles on iTunes, so you got to let us know because we can't generally figure it out, and we'll be happy to send that over to you. Well, I just want to make one final comment, Mark, which is there is a lot to learn about this. It just takes a little bit of planning, and I think the most important thing for people new is understand the basics, understand the rules of the road, talk to a lawyer, get started off on the wrong foot. The consequences can be drastic to getting a poor foundation from the get-go.
I think Matt said, don't get started off on the wrong foot. I there was a Freudian slip in there maybe, so I want to just correct that. Well, I'm so grateful to be here with you. I know Matt and I look forward to this show every week. Please keep listening. Share the show link with your friends, and we're going to see you here next week on Refresh Your Wealth.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.